Okay, we are now to item five.
Be careful, we're going to get out of here before 10:30.
John, you're
now you just jinxed.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Your I'm going to take care of that right now.
10:25.
And I'm watching you carefully.
Right, just as
is Henry going to do it?
Timmons.
All right. Yep. Are we still on four? I'm sorry.
No, just on four.
All right.
We'll get you to five pretty quickly here. I'm going to address the memo dated November 22nd regarding the structure of the SARA Investment Office. This is a little bit of a preview for a discussion that's going to come up when we talk about the budget in December. But a number of trustees have had questions about what additional resources we're going to need in the SARA Investment Office to get fully up and running with the FFP model. This is my guidance to the board about what we're going to be looking like over time here. So maybe just to frame the discussion a little bit, on my first page here, we talked about the three P's, and the three P's are really how we think about every asset manager that we look at, and it comes down to philosophy, process, and people. And I like to apply the same metrics that we use to evaluate asset managers to evaluating this organization, because after all, we are an investment allocation organization. We would expect the same things that we, we expect the same things for ourselves that we would ask for in an asset manager acting as a fiduciary on our behalf. So if you come down to the three P's of SARA going forward, I think we've tackled a large portion of this. Philosophy, last fall we had the two-day offsite. I thank you all for your time and attention for that. We started talking about FFP, we formally adopted that last December. Process, this year has been the process year. We have recrafted the investment policy statement. We are building out the investment processes, the investment resolutions, all of that, the structural framework that allows us to express our philosophy is largely in place today. And so we really come down to that people element. And we've addressed some portions of this. Obviously, we've made a change in the external consultant a couple of years ago. We've brought in some additional external resources, tools, risk analyses, that sort of thing. And I think we're really at the point where we need to focus that spotlight back on the investment office. So maybe keep this short. Turn to page two. I'm just going to talk about those charts in blue on two and three. The way we have the investment office structure today is four positions, three of which are filled. CIO, two investment analysts, and an investment officer. The investment officer position was approved in this year's budget. I've chosen not to recruit simply because we've had a lot of groundwork to lay here, getting the policy crafted, getting the processes in place, that sort of thing. So I think looking forward, what I envision is really what's on page three there. And what I'm looking for is two additional investment officer positions. And what I want to create there is some ownership around each element of FFP. And you'll see I've tagged out what I would expect of each investment officer there. We're going to have a very large allocation to private equity and private credit. This is complicated in terms of the sourcing, the oversight, the contracting, the monitoring. These are non-public information types of investments. It's just more complex and data intensive and resource intensive. So I envision an investment officer who spends their time on private equity, private credit, and real estate, both in terms of sourcing and monitoring, supported by an investment analyst. I want to add an investment officer who handles the public markets element of our growth exposure, because that's quite large as well, and that feeds into the private markets. But importantly, I want to couple that with diversifying assets, because to me, those are the two offsetting. That's the teeter-totter effect there. If we're going to bring down our diversifying assets, it's probably because there's cheap growth assets to be found. So I want somebody who kind of sees that world. And that person is going to have the risk oversight function. And then given the cornerstone element of the liquidity program in terms of funding our benefit payments, I'm handling that initially. Over time, I want to be able to hand that off to a dedicated individual there. So this is all going to come back in the budget in a couple weeks, but I just want to give a little bit of a preview about how I envision building this program going forward, and a little bit about how large I think the investment team could get to over time. Importantly, I don't envision hiring three people on January 1st. What I envision for 2016 or 2017 almost done with 2016. I'm not used to it yet. But what I envision in 2017, if the positions are approved, I'll probably recruit for two investment officers initially, and it'd be those first two columns there, the growth private markets, the growth public markets, and the diversifying. And then perhaps by the end of the year, take a look at legging into that liquidity program investment officer. But I want to make sure that program is up, running, tested, validated, and we have full board buy-in before I hand that off to another individual. So we'd be asking for all, for both additional positions in the budget. One might be filled earlier in the year, one perhaps towards the end of the year.
Tim, can you discuss for a minute the investment analyst position and some of the things that we had discussed around that as well?
Sure. The investment analyst, Jeff and Chi-Chi, have been doing a really great job. And it, as you can imagine, when we're a staff of three, everybody's lines of responsibility get a little bit blurred. Everybody steps up, and I've got a great team that operates at a very high level. But as we add people in here, we're going to have a little bit more separation of work duties. And so the investment officer is going to be focused a little bit more on the programmatic design, the manager communications, the risk monitoring. The analyst is going to be drop a little bit more into the support level. So doing more research projects, handling the back office, doing reconciliations, things of that nature that perhaps haven't gotten the time and attention we would like to have had focused on them in it. In a perfect world. So the investment officer is going to own the outcome. The analyst is going to be support, reconciliation, and basically, you know, that getting everything done that the investment officer needs to have on their plate in order to communicate to me that the goals are being fulfilled and the risks are commensurate with what the board has approved.
Tim, one of the things that jumps out to me on this, that you're building in some competition on your staff that I'm not envisioning now, as you've got, you're going to have people directly reporting to you that might have slightly different viewpoints, will have to some degree because of their responsibilities, seeking both your time, your support, fund assets to the extent that there's some variation in that, that kind of thing. What thought have you given to this? Is this something you want? By the way, this is frequently seen as good to some point, and then at some point it's not good.
Yeah, there's always that tipping point, isn't there?
Yeah.
Importantly, a six-person staff, I think, is the appropriate staffing level. I can't see getting beyond that today. And perhaps we get to five and we pause. But importantly, I do want to get the diversity of opinion in the room. That's very important to me. I think there's going to be some, there already is healthy debate. I will tell you that my staff routinely disagrees with me, and I appreciate that. Because if they're agreeing with me, you know, I can sit in my office and have that conversation with myself. I don't need somebody to help me have the conversation to get to the same point. But I think, you know, certainly I want to get to that, the diversity of opinion, but I'm very cognizant that I don't want to create silos where the growth person looks at the liquidity person and says, well, you know, I'm in competition over these assets. The asset allocation is decided by you all. We take the, you know, back to our office and figure out what the goals are, how to meet those goals, how to report back to the board, how to answer your questions, give you the guidance you need there. So I think at a five or six person staff, we're probably at a relatively sweet spot where it's displayed in a hierarchical fashion here. It's pretty flat. The reality is it's a team of colleagues who are engaged in healthy debate. But what I want is for, at the end of the day, once we're done with that healthy debate, one or two people know what they are responsible for carrying out and reporting back to me so I can give the board the guidance you need.
Okay. So. Yeah, some observations and then wanting some comment. It seems to me that we're consolidating our investment firms because of what we're doing with the fixed income, and we're getting rid of five or six, and we're going to go to three. In terms of overseeing that part of the it seems to me that it would require less staff rather than more staff. The opposite of that is, how much are we going to expand the private equity part of this, or the liquidity? In the end, when the FFP is completely finished, mm-hmm. comparing to today, say we have, we're over 40 today. Is it going to be the same number or more with FFP when everything is dispersed out and we have the investment program that we want?
Maybe I'll address that on kind of a sub-portfolio by sub-portfolio basis. And because the liquidity program, you're right, we've gone from four managers kind of occupying that core and core plus fixed income space to three. Those managers have been elevated in importance in terms of money passing through to pay our benefit payments. So to me, that is an additional level of oversight, even though there's fewer moving pieces in there. The fact that money's moving through that to fulfill a discrete outcome requires additional oversight. So that's why I want a person on that. Today, that person is me. Going forward, I think I want to hand that off, but I want to get that up and running and test it first. On the growth program, to the extent we break the fund-of-funds model on private equity, there will be more underlying general partnerships that we have to monitor for the same economic exposure. Now, we're still in the process of searching for the private markets advisor. I can't tell you that we're going to have, you know, fewer or less, but my all indications of the conversations with the private market advisors to date would indicate we're going to have to be sourcing more of those underlying general partnerships rather than just aggregating them up at the fund-of-funds level. Okay. So there's an additional level of oversight. Importantly, it's more information flowing into our team as well, but we want to be able to receive it and process it in an intelligent fashion. So I would expect the number of line items in the growth portfolio to expand simply because of the expansion of the private markets program. The diversifying program, that's kind of being built out from scratch, so that'll expand as well. What I don't want is to come back in here in 2 or 3 years and go from discussing 40 or 50 managers to having the board say, well, now we're overseeing 120 managers. Absolutely not. Don't want to get there. So we want to be able to build on large partnerships, really find like-minded asset managers and expand those relationships. So I think what we're going to see is we're going to go deeper with a smaller set of managers. But in order to go deeper, I have to have a person who's like, that's my job, is to be very deep in their team, understand their thinking, understanding their view of the world, understanding how that compares to the next
one. Going to their fund 3, 4, 5, 6 because they're done well 1, 2.
Or going to a separate account and really crafting something that's very, very highly aligned.
All right. Us.
I think a policy would be for every manager we have, we get rid of 2.
We can take that under advisement.
Jerry.
Yes. Second thing. What is the size of the investment staff? Do you have an idea what the size of the investment staff is with Alameda, Santa Barbara, San Bernardino, and Ventura? Because those are similar in size to us. Just out of curiosity, what is their investment staff's size? Does anybody know?
Alameda has five. Yeah. San Bernardino has...
Alameda now has 6.
Okay, San Bernardino has 6.
Full-time.
6.5. Ventura is smaller. They, to the best of my knowledge, have ACIO, a single person. Sorry, what was the other one you mentioned?
Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara is about a third of the size of us, and they have one person currently.
Okay. So Alameda and San Bernardino are closer to us, and they're in the same ballpark that you're looking to go to.
Yes.
Okay. The last question that I have and that I want an answer to is, before we approve this, what I would like to see is a dollar and cents figure of how much your staff costs today with the three and how much this staff is going to cost with the six.
Yep.
Total salary, and it could be at a monthly. The monthly for today's staff is $22,000 a month. The monthly for this six-person staff is going to be $40,000 a month. I want that figure before I can say yes or no.
Yeah, and just to be clear, we're not asking for any approvals today. This is just a preview. All that data will be embedded in the budget.
Good.
When it comes back.
Good.
Yeah.
The other jury.
Just to give you a ballpark on that, you know, we're looking at around 160 starting salary, and then benefits is usually half of that. So that gives
okay,
you a
but
ballpark. But that will all be when we bring
ballpark,
that back to the
budget.
It'll be fully baked in there, and you'll know exactly.
But I want
what we're talking
for me to help me understand. I want the total
yeah.
figure.
Yeah,
and you know,
and
maybe an observation from you too as to how much this is going to impact your budget when it's done.
Mm-hmm. We'll still fall very much
under.
Yeah, well, and then also investment expenses are outside of our statutory limit. That's only for the administrative. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, when we're looking at everything that we're doing, when it all comes back to us being fiduciaries of this plan, I think a good portion of that is making sure that we have good processes and good procedures that we're following, and ensuring that we have adequate staffing to handle what we're handling right now. And I think, you know, I wouldn't say that we're remiss in any of that right now, but I think that in looking forward, okay, what is going to be, you know, yes, we're going to be frugal on how we do things, but what's the best right way of doing it versus Sarah? So I think taking it, you know, all of those pieces into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
And having the investment analyst being able to handle more of the operational day-to-day items and have more of those tasks under their belt so that, you know, it's really playing to our strengths and really dividing and conquering and making sure that we're handling it in the best way that we can. But we're definitely aware of the dollar impact.
You're on.
Drum roll.
Full coming.
Thank you. I forgot what I was going to ask.
That's my line.
Tim, you briefly touched on siloing, and I have a different thought on that, or not a different thought, an ancillary, I guess, thought to that. And that's on, I consider myself to have some professional degree of success with generalists, being surrounded by generalists, and I don't consider generalists, and I don't think you do either, to be a negative.
Absolutely not.
It's a good cross-training process. And to what extent, as this model, you know, fleshes itself out, there's going to be some degree of specialization. And how are you going to try and guard against this siloing from a knowledge standpoint, from an experience standpoint? And I'm concerned about staff development as well. And don't misunderstand this, but a view towards succession planning and that sort of thing. It's tough to have an organization when you say, I couldn't be in this spot because I'm a specialist over here.
Yeah.
Or I don't know what they're doing over here because I'm a specialist over there. How are we going to try and guard against that?
Sure. It's first off, at a 5 or 6 person staff, you're still pretty small. When we have staff meetings and staff debates, it's all hands on deck. But what we want to get to is, you know, it's a very clear indication that once the debate is done and everybody has voiced their opinion and we've kind of come to a consensus, there is that individual who says, probably an individual who, because of their specialization, brought an idea to the attention of the group. The group fleshed it out. It was beat up from all sides, from folks who have a more of a debt orientation, from folks who have more of an equity orientation, from folks who have more of an operational orientation. So it's being vetted by more disparate opinions. But importantly, once that conversation is done, once that staff meeting is done, I want that person who initiated the idea to own it and be the implementer of it as well. So I think, you know, just the way our office is structured physically, we're all constantly in a common area discussing. We add one person in, we add two people in, we still constantly discuss in an open forum. We also have our formal staff meetings where we vet things that are going through our workflow process. That's something I really worry about is that degree of specialization that where one person says, I just need to sit in my office, do my work, whatever anybody else is doing is not of a concern to me. If my staff doesn't understand how their responsibilities are serving the overall organizational goal as expressed by me or by this board. I pretty much failed in my job as a chief investment officer at that point. So I think the collegiality is an important aspect. The open communication is an important aspect. The open debate is a huge aspect of that. But the ownership on the idea generation and idea implementation is probably the biggest differentiation I see going forward into the structure.
And hopefully you keep that in mind, too, as you're looking at any potential outside candidates. So that they don't think they're coming in and they get locked into an office and I do this.
Yeah, culture is going to be huge as we build this out. Culture okay. is huge.
Thanks.
What do you use growth in the investment office or growth private markets? What's that term mean?
The growth sub-portfolio.
Okay.
So we have the three sub-portfolios, one of which is the largest of which is the growth sub-portfolio. That's just intended to be our long-term growth. So our private equity, private credit, public equity, high yield, real estate, that's all embedded in there. And so I'm dividing that huge 71% or 63% growth allocation into public markets and private markets. Because the private markets is it's just a different sourcing model. It's you've got to, you know, start crafting the new relationships with the general partners, understand what they're doing, do a lot of term negotiation, and then once it goes live, you don't have the same degree of visibility into the portfolio, so it's a different way of monitoring. Portfolio is much more conversational. You have to be networking with the other limited partners. It's just a lot more hours involved in monitoring that, so I want somebody to really own that functionality.
Belinda?
Yes, just want to have a clarification. For investment officers, you said ownership of investment outcomes,
yes.
Right? So does that mean they will be held accountable for the investment returns?
The way I want to be...
Yeah.
This is something
exactly,
where we've
yes.
talked about with this board. When it, you know, we are in a collaborative decision-making environment between the investment function, the executive function of this organization, and the full board. There are portions of this that have been delegated to the investment staff. There are portions of the investment decisions that the board maintains. So I can't turn to somebody and say, the XYZ portfolio is underperforming and I'm going to hold you accountable for that. And they say, well, but the board made the decision to hire that manager. I'm overseeing them and kind of guiding. So this is probably something that's not going to be a direct tie-out, but there will be a culture around this of saying, if we've got an issue with a sub-portfolio, you're responsible for stepping up the monitoring, reaching out to other investors, reaching out to the manager, providing guidance back up to me, making sure I have the information to give the guidance to the board about an appropriate course of action here. So it's going to be more of a cultural investment outcome ownership and not necessarily something that has a financial implication.
Yeah, okay.
And I think it also harkens back to what it really means to have investment success. And yeah, we have to be able to make our benefit payments and we have to true up our, reserve funds and we do have to do all of these things. But also, it's not about, okay, Tim missed the bogey last year, so he's out of here. I hope we're never in that situation. But it's more of that discussion on, okay, are we being proactive in our manager research and selection? And, when things do occur, what happens next and how do we handle that? And do we have a good process and procedure in place for different things, and are we following it? So I think that, but it's a good question because
it says ownership of investment outcomes. Yeah. So that's why I want to clarify that. And another thing is you also have this kind of, you mentioned a segregation of duties. So each investment officer will provide oversight for one bucket. Now, how do you do the segregation of duties between the consultant and also the investment staff?
Sure. The consultant I view as really working for this board,
yeah.
Not working for me, working for the board. So providing the strategic oversight, doing the asset allocation work, doing the performance monitoring, doing the big picture fiduciary guidance to this board. My investment staff is more implementation focused. So managing managing and monitoring the managers on a more detailed basis, understanding the risk factors embedded in there, doing portfolio monitoring, and doing some of the more detailed investment research work to find, so the fill-in managers, the completion managers, I view that as own that. The big picture strategic decisions that the board needs to make, that's coming through your external consultant.
I wanted to follow up on the question about the ownership of the results or the I won't call it a silo, the group or the subgroup management.
Yeah.
I think you said somewhere in there that it might be unfair to hold the investment officer responsible for some aspect of performance because the board made the decision. And I feel, though, like part of the change that we're instituting here is that we're going to really change the way we do manager selection and you know, how we actually construct the portfolio, and that the reality is we're going to have managers who are vetted thoroughly by you and your staff, and to some degree by Verus, and then it's going to come up to us as a sort of a yay or nay, mm-hmm. kind of an approach versus the former construct of the beauty contest. So I do think, in terms of, I'm not trying to indicate how people should manage their investment house, but it seems to me that the subgroup people have to have some accountability. I guess the question is, where does the buck stop? I mean, I fully agree, you don't take a year look and if things are bad, everybody looks at Tim and says, you know, hey, you know, it's not the Jurgen Klinsmann thing. But it's you know, I just think there has to be some sort of identified accountability, because you know, I mean, I sent you this stuff on Dallas, and it's I know it's got myriad complications and it's different, but it's interesting to hear from the trustees and others who've been contacted about that, what their story is. You know, everybody's, you know, somebody else's deal, right? Yeah. Well, not me. It was the legislature. They did this. They only meet twice a year, or every other year, and don't know. And we didn't know. And so, you know, accountability is important.
Accountability is absolutely important. And maybe let me give a more fulsome answer. With the toolkit of incentives I have, I'm going to be measuring folks on their ability to put good information into the system, to do proper monitoring, to follow process, to improve process, that sort of thing. Maybe I misanswered the question. What we're not doing is saying, and because we've had the conversation of compensation structures and that sort of thing, and so what I want to be very cognizant of is there's no incentive compensation structure here. So there's nothing that says you outperform by X percent and therefore your compensation is adjusted accordingly. That's, I guess, what I was trying to answer originally, was that toolkit is not available, so we set that aside and say, what do we hold accountable for? Process, quality of information, quality of engagement, sharing of information across the team, that sort of thing. And it's just a little bit of a separation. So when I say the investment ownership is going to be more cultural, it's going to be, how do you work with us? How do you work with the external community? What information is flowing through your pipeline so that we are able to put good investments in front of the board? What we can't do is do that direct tie-out of your sub-portfolio outperformed by X percent, and therefore there's a positive or negative outcome associated with that. That was what I was trying to get at with the original answer.
And that makes sense. In a prior life, I was in a firm where, you know, the varying sectors would all want to tout who had the most revenues and, you know, who was more valuable and all that stuff. I mean, I know that goes on everywhere all the time.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you're neither going to punish nor reward or be able to, on a performance basis, the management of the of that sub-portfolio. That's not part of the design. What I'm trying to get at is that at some point there has to, particularly in that private equity alternatives area, because it's a different beast altogether.
Yep.
And so at some point, and I know this will flesh out as we go, I think it's important to understand what the metrics are, how we're going to decide, how, you know, when we declare victory and how often and why or why not, I think is important, because it's a tough one. It's a mysterious, to most of us who don't do this every day, it's a bit of a mysterious area, the private equity area. And, I mean, I understand it's complex, it's nuanced, it's all those things. So it'll be important to understand how we have to evaluate it year to year, quarter to quarter, as we, you know, hit our inevitable bumps in the road and all that stuff.
Yep.
I just, it's ultimately, I just want to understand the ultimate accountability for it.
And those conversations are going to continue over the upcoming year. As we talk about private markets advisors, as we talk about how a future hire is going to work with a private markets advisor that's selected, you're going to certainly have the guidance back from Verus over what a successful program looks like, how it should be measured, what are the appropriate risks, et cetera. So you'll be getting feedback from me, from the private markets advisor, from your general investment consultant. You're going to have multiple viewpoints coming at that. So that conversation by no means stops today and comes back a year from now. That's something that will be very iterative with the board over the upcoming year.
One thing I want to mention is that there will be clear accountabilities with these positions, as there are. I mean, I think across the organization, we've had clearer and clearer accountabilities. And especially when you have such collaboration, it's very important that everyone is clear in, you know, on what they're accountable to and for. And so that's something that's very important. And obviously, these are very critical, important roles for us. And their performance will be managed to, you know, it won't be a large extent to how their underlying managers are performing, though. And that has a lot to do with kind of our current setup.
Gail, do we have, when we hire a new employee, do we have a probationary period?
Typically we do, yes.
How long is that?
Some positions are 6 months, some are 9 months.
Excuse me?
Some positions are 6 months, some positions are 9 months. The investment officer one in particular is six months. Yeah.
Okay.
Got a producer out.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, so we have like a 12-month probationary. I mean, just in the hospital.
And they don't.
I have confidence that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I have confidence that Tim is going to really invest the time and the effort to bring somebody in that is of quality and that would, you know, really fit the team well and so forth. But as a kind of a safety switch, you know, if you have an inadequate probationary period where, you know, things aren't working out, then you can say thanks but no thanks kind of situation. So is that for an investment officer, would that be a management position that is not subject to a union MOU, or it is?
It's an unrepresented position.
So would it be possible for us to revisit the length of the probationary period, perhaps extending it and give us a little bit more of a...
Well, I think that a couple things on that. I mean, obviously, we can always take a look if, you know, if situations change or something merits a review of the probationary period. I think that one thing to keep in mind is that, you know, the investment officer position is not subject to civil service. You know, we don't have a civil service board. We don't have civil service rules that they're applicable to. I mean, it's a pretty much at-will type position.
Okay.
But as always, we want folks to be successful, and, you know, it is a two-way relationship, and that 6 months is really kind of, you know, both parties determining that relationship.
But there's nothing that happens at 6 months and one day that materially changes our ability to part ways if we
Correct.
See an issue down the road.
Yeah.
You run into hiring problems if you have too long a period out there for the individual to not know whether or not they've met the preliminary period of acceptance by the program. So this is, everyone recognizes, of course, for Tim and Gail, this is an educational session. And I want to make sure that any feedback that any of us have.
I saw it more as softening up.
take advantage of it and
Yeah, so this isn't an actionable item today. We're going to be coming back in December. This is just, to frame this conversation with the board.
Jerry was asking, what's the expense of going this route, and how is that going to, how does that balance with enhancement of a gain and so forth? And in this situation, especially with private equity, because of its complexity, I mean, we're going after that, hoping for bigger yield, but it's a mysterious zone for, and if you have the right person in place, you hope that that individual will help enhance that yield return, but also to help mitigate risk being involved in that area. Mm-hmm. So the expense of bringing someone in, especially for that particular role, it may not be as obvious as, you know, with a superficial number show. So,
yeah, I think when we stack up all the expenses associated with implementing the investment program, the internal investment staff is a relatively modest portion of the overall expense of implementing the investment program. In the CAPR, we see the external fees, $42 million, roughly. Henry can correct me on that, but that ballpark in external management fees last year. We didn't spend anywhere near $42 million on internal investment staff. So, yeah, you'll see it in the budget. It's going to be well under $1 million currently. But yeah, it's a relatively modest portion of the overall expense. And Ed would remind me that the investment consultant is probably even smaller than the internal investment staff.
Gabe.
I was going to say, I support this, what I'm hearing so far, and I think the way we're going to meet the challenges of hitting our assumption rate is going to have to go forward with something like this, and I think it's a great idea.
A lot of this is pulling ownership closer to Sisera. We've relied on external partners, and we've had great external partners, but we want to pull some of that ownership of outcomes and information closer in so we can process it better and hopefully come back to the board with more actionable intelligence. I think the reality is if this structure leads to one more positive investment idea per annum, we've probably got a 10x return on the labor cost associated with this.
Comment for both Gail and Tim. I appreciate the transparency on this. You know, a lot of times we have these sessions and we ask a lot of questions and kind of drill into areas we don't know anything about. But the opportunity to do it and to understand it better and have this as a discussion item first before it hits us as a budget item, it's a great thing. Because in talking to my peers and other systems, I don't get the sense that other systems are as transparent as we are, particularly on the discussions we're having today. So and it's appreciated from where I sit.
Yeah, and I know there's been a lot of questions from the trustees over the course of the year as we crafted the new asset allocation, as we crafted the new investment policy statement, about what this would mean for Sisera internally. So we wanted to be as clear as we could about, you know, where I see the investment department going forward.
I was going to make a comment in Port Trustees Comp, but I'll do it now, that I attended the IFEPB Trustee Master's Program. I had a lot of case studies, interaction with everybody, and I was very impressed with the way our board handles things. And a lot of times I would get insight, they give us a case scenario, and I think, well, what would our board do? Usually it was the way we went with the case study. So I do think I was thinking myself, if we had like an NBA championship, I think we might win it against the other 1937 at board. So.
But we're only really competing against ourselves, right? We only, you know, we want to better ourselves.
Seriously?
Gabe just wants to
get where your head's at, Gabe.
Any other trustee input for Tim? I was going to comment while we're on the topic we were just on, and Jerry's very nicely holding, I can't quite see the title of it, but the annual SACRS presentation.
There it is. Ken's report.
I wanted to give you a chance to take a little bit of a victory lap on how Plan 118, that's our number in this, came out. It was impressive.
2 years in a row.
Yeah. You want to spend a moment on it?
You know, I'm always going to caution you against focusing on pure relative results because everybody's got a different liability profile and cash flow profile in there. But we do have the, amongst SACRS plans, we have the top 10-year result and the top 20-year result. And certainly what your peer is doing is of some interest. I would say don't focus there. And shorter periods are pretty noisy, so don't focus there. But once we get to 10 and 20 years, I think we've done a good job of beating our policy benchmark. And it's nice to see that our results are superior to some of our peers. So, yeah.
Very modestly put.
Very smooth, Tim.
Belinda.
I just want to say I really totally agree with that. And whenever I talk to Rusty about it, and we're looking at a 10, 5-year, and especially even longer term, CCSER has done stellar performance. I mean, the performance is just out there. And I came from Alameda County, and I hate to say that Alameda County just can't beat CCSER. Alameda County, when I was there, the assets was larger than CCSER, but now it's lower.
Yep.
So this fund has done a tremendous good job.
Yeah, I mean, over 20 years, that is multiple iterations of the board, multiple iterations of executive staff, the creation of an internal investment staff, multiple iterations of external asset managers. So, I think we can all take pride in that long-term outcome.
Yeah. And pool, it's a relative, it's like top 5%, right, CCSER. And the pool, the students in this pool are excellent students, too. So in order to beat the rest of fund systems, it's not easy.
Yeah, and obviously we want to make sure we get our benefits paid, our funded status up, and that's where my focus is. Unfortunately, that report touches on the overall performance, but there's a lot more that goes into it than that, as we know. And I hate to be, kind of a bummer on this, but we know we've got more work to do. We're ready for it. I think this board is ready for it, and we're on the right course of action here.
Good. With that, I know I've put at risk my...
Yeah, your personal best is at risk.
My personal best is about to disappear. let's take 7 minutes.